So if you're a very careful observer, you'll notice that Emma has the same strum pattern that I have, because she learned how to play the guitar at Crossroads. I started a tradition in my first pastorate in 2001 of not preaching a typical Mother's Day message on Mother's Day, because I think that, as I say in my notes, that women tend to measure what they're doing in terms of what more they could be doing. And so I always have this concern about making mothers feel bad on Mother's Day or leaving, feeling like they need to do more. I'm going to break that tradition a little bit this week, or I should say this year. I'm still going to talk about how to be a blessing to the woman in your life, the mother in your life, the mom in your life, the mother of your children. But I would like to do something that I don't believe I've only done but once, and that's read Proverbs chapter 31. So I'd like you to turn to Proverbs chapter 31. The only time I've ever preached on Proverbs chapter 31, to my recollection, was an extremely uncomfortable church service for my wife. And that is, I went through Proverbs chapter 31, and as a type of an ode to my wife, I related all the ways that my children see this in my wife. After I was finished preaching, a man came up to me and said, "You must have been in one big doghouse to do that." But I'm going to read Proverbs 31 because I have always believed that for the most part, and by the grace of God, and where there have been gaps in this, the grace of God, I believe, has made up the difference, that the mothers of our church have always exemplified Proverbs chapter 31. You've heard me say 1,000 times as pastor of Crossroads that we are in a society that's without natural affection. Sometimes, as of late in the last 5 years especially, when I do my first session with couples, I literally sit back sometimes and go, I do not know where to start with this particular couple. Because some of the roles and the normative roles that we've experienced for 6,000 years of world history in most cultures are so backwards. But I have always believed that the mothers in our congregation, our children, have not needed to read Proverbs 31 as much as to watch our mothers. And I've always believed that with the bottom of my heart. In a sense, that has made us a little bit of an oddity, honestly, as a church. And I think that in a day when people pick a church based upon in a sense, hyper-connectivity and the ability to hyper-associate with that particular group, I think it has made us a little bit of an oddity and somewhat of a deterrent to some, possibly. But Proverbs 31, I would like us to start in verse number 10. I'd like to comment, and then I would like to look at how to be a blessing to the woman in your life. Verse number 10 says, "Who can find a virtuous woman?" So even back in biblical times, remember Pastor Kermit says, do you know what people were looking for in the good old days? They wanted to get back to the good old days. So in the good old days, they said, "Who can find a virtuous woman?" It was still a hard find. "Her price is far above rubies." C.S. Lewis actually said that all other careers exist to support the most important career, and that is the career of motherhood. And that's a true statement. It doesn't mean that if a wife works that she's Ichabod. It doesn't mean that she's unbiblical, but what it means is that every other career, when I look at it as a man, I'm supposed to take the hits and go out and work. I'm to be the husband, the band around the house. I'm to be the outside of the thermos, if you will, that takes the hit to support the inward part of the thermos so that it can do its job. And it's a more fragile part in comparison to the outward part, but it certainly is just as valuable, if not more valuable. So C.S. Lewis said all careers exist to support the master career, the most important career, and that's the career of motherhood. "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that she will have no need of spoil." I'm going to switch reading glasses here for just a few moments here. It'll be a great miracle if I ever go to the eye doctor. Until then, I buy my $1 reading glasses. "But the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil." So she makes the most of her present assets. My wife has always honestly taught our daughters a doctoral class in this area of making the most of our present assets. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. The scripture says that a wise woman builds her house. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. A few years ago, I was at a shopping mall with my dad, and he says, Butch, look. He said, look at the shopping gene coming out in the women. And I noticed something that I've never noticed before. If you see women at a Goodwill, thrift store, or at a local mall, it's amazing how they can sling those hammers. And they are, I'm sorry, sling those hangers. It's amazing how they are locked in. If you'll notice, go out and about, go to a thrift store, go to a shopping mall, and just watch them moving the hangers over and over and over again. And they are locked in just like a man is locked in when he's shooting a rifle. They are absolutely locked. They are in rhythm. It's almost like the whole store itself becomes in sync with women just moving hangers over and over. And my dad says it's a shopping gene, and he's exactly correct. You should see me when I buy shoes. I usually buy clothes twice a year. I go into Old Navy, and it takes me 15 minutes to go into Old Navy and come out. Literally 15 minutes. I buy the same shirts, the same shorts, and I grab about three pair of shorts. I grab about three pair of jeans, and I grab about three pair of shirts, and I'm done for that season. That's it. My wife is not necessarily the same way. She's like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. I never realized till a few years ago that women stress every day about what are we going to eat today? And they think ahead. Now, that would seem ridiculous for me to actually acknowledge that. But I remember a few years ago, I realized my wife actually stresses about what we're going to eat today. She has to think about those things. And I know that I should have already known that. But there is, once again, this quality that a woman has to be thinking about what the family is going to eat. She riseth also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. So generally speaking, I believe that women listen, they sleep with a listening ear. I have the ability to sleep through a hurricane, but my wife has always slept with a listening ear. And oftentimes I'll wake up in the morning and I'll say, how are you this morning, honey? She goes, a little tired. I'm like, well, did something happen? And then it's just rub salt into the wound. Did something happen last night? Did something occur? And she said, you didn't hear what was going on? And then she goes, now she just says, yeah, you didn't hear what was going on. She considereth the field and buyeth it with the fruit of her hand. She planteth a vineyard. And there's also, and advertisers understand this, there is within a woman's mind, I believe, generally speaking, this attraction to a deal. You see, the scripture says here, she considers a field and she buys it. The other day, we had a lady who wanted a bid from us, and the bid was a little heavier than her neighbor's household. Of course, we had quoted her neighbor 7 or 8 years ago, so because of inflation, the estimate was a little higher than her neighbor's household. And she said, I need to think about it. We don't have a lot of people that price shop us. I'm really not used to that. We had a cancellation that day, so I sent her out a text, and I said, hey, if we can come today, we just had a cancellation. I can knock it down to your neighbor's price, and we can do it for $50 cheaper. And she jumped all over that. Now, when we arrived, her husband was in a very grumpy way. He was in the back pressure cleaning the porch. He was all relaxed. He was enjoying the day. And she comes in and says, hey, the window cleaners are here. We got to pressure clean the porch. And he said, I was just relaxing, having a good time. And she told her husband, they're going to be here in 30 minutes. So he's out there without a shirt on. He's pressure cleaning the back porch. But just to get a good deal, once again, she was extremely, extremely excited about us coming that day. There's a gene, I believe, within a woman that wants a good deal. Advertisers know this. Those 40% off coupons from Hobby Lobby and Joann Fabrics. The advertisers, they have little men in white suits that sit around studying these facts and studying these factors, and they certainly know that this biblical truth is there. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. You see here, I see here a good form of pride The scripture says, give honor where honor is due. There's a good form of pride for her family name. And the way that her family looks, if you will, she perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Then the Bible says here in verse number 20, she stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She's not idle with her time. She's a blessing to the communities. I think it's amazing the amount of Christian ministries that operate in our particular locale, and amazing Christian ministries, such as the women's pregnancy centers, mostly ran by women, that are not going to be idle with their time. And it's amazing the amount of charity organizations that occur, Foster Florida, that subsist, and they are quality programs because of moms and mothers that are not going to be idle with their time. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She wants her family, in a good sort of way, from a motivation of having a healthy sort of pride, to have a good appearance. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk with purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Look back at that verse. Her husband is known in the gates. I may get credit for the state of our home, but oftentimes it's my wife that's in the background that's doing much of the work. I may work and support financially much that's going on, but it's my wife that's making the family look good. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she will rejoice in time to come. I think of the phrase Matthew Henry said, that if the man is the head of the household, the woman is the crown that adds a shine or a sheen to the head. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. So she's not talking foolishness. She works at being wise with her words. She looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. It's a known thing that women oftentimes, they want attention. They think about attention. But God says the greatest long-lasting attention that a woman can have comes through fearing the Lord. And I want to thank the mothers of our church and the wives that have been in our church for living out Proverbs chapter 31. And your testimony does not go unnoticed. But that being the case, I would like us to talk for a few moments about how to love the woman in your life, how to love the mom in your life especially. And the first point I wrote down is to think differently than your gender. To think differently than your gender. Not to look at your wife or the mother of your children simply through the lens of masculinity. I want us to go to 1 Corinthians 13 and verse number 5. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse number 5. One of my favorite verses, the Bible says, love seeketh not her own, or charity in the King James, seeketh not her own. I remember years ago, I think the year was around 1997, it was Christmas time, and I bought a Christmas gift for my wife, and I bought her a picture of the Old Testament tabernacle. It was amazing how I was projecting my love for the picture upon my wife. I thought if I loved it, she would love it. I brought it home. I showed it to Anna Rose, and she said, she went just like that. We took it back. I believe it cost about $70. I think I made $625 framing at the time. I have no idea how in the world I afforded that. But we have this propensity, especially as young men, to project our the way that we want to be loved upon another person. And there's some things that I started to observe as a young husband over the years. I remember in my first pastorate that when I was talking to the deacon board about my work at the church, I asked them for Mondays off, because that's just scriptural. And anybody knows me knows that I don't like to work on Mondays, something that started in college for me. But I asked them for Mondays off, and I said, and Friday afternoons. And then I asked them for 3 weeks vacation. At that time, they were really hot on my trail, so I could get anything I wanted at that particular time from the deacon board. That was not the case a year from then. But I remember that some months later, my wife talked about how much that Friday afternoon was so much of a help to her, because I was there to help with Mark, Rachel, Lydia, and Mary. Grace had not been born as of yet. And at that particular time, we had moved to... Josh, give me a little glass of water if you don't mind. We had moved to Johnstown, and we had a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and 2 1-year-olds. And so with that many little children, it was amazing to hear my wife say how me just being home, even if I wasn't doing much, me just being home was a good break for her. I remember hearing my wife say just a few days ago to somebody, actually she was saying to the children, hey, Dad makes breakfast on Fridays. I don't always do it, but a lot of times I make the two things that are my recipe repertoire, and that's buttermilk pancakes or waffles. But just the fact of me getting up on Friday mornings and getting in the kitchen and making an attempt at making buttermilk pancakes and bacon for the children, it's amazing how that little bit of help from my wife goes a long way, that she would make that comment to the children. Years ago, when we had five that were 8 and under, I used to try to put the children to bed at night. That's back when I worked a normal job. And I would try to help put the children to bed at night. And it would only take 15 or 20 minutes. I do have a reputation. I'm sure none of you dads do this either. But sometimes I would get them a little too stirred up when I put them to bed. I'd pull the instruments out and start singing silly songs. So in that respect, I wasn't much of a help. But even just that 15 minutes, it was amazing to hear my wife talk about how that was so much of a help to her. I think this is important because I'm going to relate this back to 1 Corinthians 13:5, which says that charity seeketh not her own. Because to be honest with you, all these things that I have at times done in our marriage, I didn't think were much of a big deal to my wife. But it was amazing finding out at a later time that they were a really big deal to my wife. And I say this because I think that we have to read the other gender. The Bible says, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. And it leads me to my next big point in talking about physical strain. I'm going to talk about that in a few moments. But I do want to talk about how the smallest things that give your wife a break, especially if you have a vast amount of responsibilities with the household and with the children, it's amazing how just the smallest amount of time can be a great blessing to your wife. Now, I want to speak to the young men especially, because it took me a few years to observe this and to realize that this was a big deal. Because once again, if you help me out for 15 minutes on something, to me, it's not that big of a deal. If you help me out with putting the children to bed for another 10 minutes, or if you decide to make breakfast, to me, I don't think it would be that big of a deal. But for some reason, those small breaks, those small times of rest from normal activity, it's amazing how it has a way of rejuvenating a wife's mind and giving rest to her spirit. So that's point number one. Point number two, I want to talk about physical strain. If you ask me to go help with the groceries after we get back from Publix, I will take pride in showing everybody around me that I can carry every single bag that's in the back of the van. Have you dads like that? Getting 52 Winn-Dixie bags or 52 Publix bags and carrying them in and showing everybody how strong I am, it just seems to be something that I've always enjoyed doing. I live a very, very weird life. But the point is that I want you to experiment a little bit, because I think that men like to strain themselves physically. I believe that we are geared to strain ourselves physically. We're geared to exercise our muscles. But I've noticed something, how much of a help it is just helping my wife with something physically. Here's what I mean by this. I encourage you to go to Lowe's and do a little experiment. find an old man that has some concrete bags or has some 2x4s and help him. You're going to help him, he's going to say, hey, thanks, buddy. But you find an old lady who has some bags of soil or some bricks or some pavers that she's bought, and you find her out by her car and she's struggling to put them in. If you help her, this is the response that you're going to get. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness, you're so nice. You know, and usually when people say that, I said, I wish everyone thought that. And usually when people ask what my name is, Raymond, I say, just so you know, everybody does not love Raymond. But let me say this, that when it comes to physical strain, I used to project myself upon my wife. And I would often think, hey, if I can carry 50 bags in it, you can carry 10, it's fine. And do you know how harsh that sounds to the ear of a woman? It sounds harsh, it sounds rude, and there's a part of her old high school girl that would want to come out and say, boy, you're acting like a jerk today. But the thing is that for a man, it's not so much that they're trying to be harsh or rude or selfish, it's just that we're projecting ourselves on the woman that's in our life, and we'd like to exert ourselves physically. But one of the things that I've noticed is how much a woman appreciates when you hold a door open for her, when she has to do less physical labor. I'm not saying that women are not strong. I'm not saying that that they don't like from time to time to exert themselves physically. But I notice that if you help a woman in the area of exerting themselves physically, how much they appreciate it. And I think that many a man has become bitter, if not a little turned off or turned around inside of himself. And then the arguments ensue when a man tries to project his masculine approach to work upon a woman. In fact, we can cause a lot of, and I think I did this with my girls from time to time, in seeing the state of workers in the world. A lot of times I think I was probably a little too tough on our children. But I think that sometimes we try to make little men out of our wives, and we have this spirit of criticism that comes across like, well, I can do that. I do that every day. Why can't you do that? What are you being, just a big baby? We may not say that with our words, but we can come across that way. And helping your wife from a physical perspective, even the smallest of areas, you're going to find an ease of spirit when you do those things. I rarely help a man at Lowe's or help another man, and he doesn't go, oh, you're so nice. He doesn't do that. But an old woman will especially go, you are so nice. Thank you so much for doing that. Just notice the thankfulness that you get. But it leads me to my next point. I want to talk about tension. As a man, how many of you are what's called a whistle splitter? Does anybody know what a whistle splitter is? It's an old term out of our old manufacturing days in our society. But a whistle splitter is a man who, he was never late, but when the whistle went off, when those workers were supposed to be there, that's when he arrived. He's what's called a whistle splitter. He would arrive when the whistle went off in the factory for him to be there. I personally thrive off of tension. I personally, I'm not saying that I necessarily create it in my life, but I thrive off of having a goal to meet, and it has to be met in an efficient manner. And I say this because it's taken me a while in marriage, and I'm not so sure that I've learned it as I need to recognize that, and especially after counseling so many couples, that most women, when it comes to tension in the air, it breaks something inside of them. I'm going to talk about that in a few moments here. But let's say, for instance, we have a wedding coming up, June 17th. I texted Lydia. I said, Lydia, we just spent $100,000 on your wedding venue. It looks beautiful. And she said, yes, let's use it. And as soon as she said this, so many things clicked in my mind. Now, I don't want her to hear this, because if she realizes I didn't have to spend all this money, she's going to think, I can spend it over there. And all these things clicked in my mind. I don't have to take much time off of work. I don't have to travel up to Wisconsin. And I also don't have to rent a venue up there. Hey, I just saved $8,000 off of our $100,000 investment here. Now, the point being is this, I went to my wife yesterday. I said, hey, let's make a list of all the things that need to be done before June 17th. And you could just feel her just like, hey, that's a good idea. Because she has this thing in her back of her mind, this thought of, this man's going to wait till 10 days before June 17th and start doing everything. And that's going to ride the spirit of my wife. Any of you ladies know exactly what I'm talking about? I know none of you men are guilty of this. But the point is that tension can cause a man to thrive. I think that we're geared that way. I think we're geared to capture that energy and use it in a time of war. But my wife doesn't want that kind of tension leading up to a wedding. I say this because we have to be careful projecting ourselves on our wives. Now, raising boys versus raising girls. Boys have a fight. We had a neighbor kid come over the other day, and there was some big, huge altercation out here on the playground, out here in the pasture. I mean, it was huge. We had fists being thrown and bad words that were being said, obviously from the other kid, not any had to deal with mine, none whatsoever. But it's amazing how I came out and I said, boys, I said, you guys have a great friendship. Get over it and get out there and play and don't ruin the whole day. And guess what they were able to do? Get over it and get out there and play. I've also lived with five women in my life, and I realized that little girls don't necessarily have that natural propensity to do that. And the reason I said this is because when tension arises, there's something I think that breaks inside of a woman, especially when there's a constant harsh tension, if you will. Think about fire, if you will. Fire is man's greatest asset, but is also man's greatest detriment. When harnessed correctly, fire has been used throughout the ages, obviously for man's benefit, especially during the Industrial Revolution. We still use it now. When you get in your car and turn your key, there's lots of fires that are going on. There's lots of explosions that are taking place. Many explosions per second. That fire is harnessed, and that energy is harnessed towards that mass airflow machine that you call a car, and it causes the drivetrain to grow and the wheels turn. And that fire is used as an asset every day, whether you understand it or not. But it can also be a detriment, if you will. And there's a sense where, when it comes to tension can be used greatly by men. We have an ability, I believe, to capture it, harness it, box it up, and use that energy. But I find that with women, generally speaking, it's not so much the case. And I find that, generally speaking, that when there's constant unnecessary tension, especially between a man and a woman, a father and the children and the mother, the family and other families, I find that something breaks within a woman, especially if it's unnecessary tension. And so what we tend to do as men is think to ourselves, well, I may experience tension, but I get over it. You can get over it too. And once again, one of the things that I share with men is what you're trying to make your wife is really a man trapped inside of a woman's body. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to masculinize her, but then you want her to be feminine in the areas where you want her to be feminine. And the point being is this, is that it took me a long time to realize that I may thrive off of tension. I may thrive off of waiting to the last minute. I may thrive off of a good argument, in a sense. I may thrive off of a good debate, but I found that it would break something inside of my wife. And so once again, you're not married to yourself. And then a third thing I want to mention here, and the idea of thinking differently about than your gender, thinking differently and taking off the lens of your masculinity and looking at the needs of your wife. The Bible says, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. That a woman walks into a relationship, I believe, when she's young, 18, 19, maybe 25, 26, whatever. She walks into a relationship with hope and vulnerability. Proverbs 13:12 tells us this. It says, hope deferred maketh the heart sick. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick. And I believe that a woman especially walks into a relationship with hope, that even if she sees negative qualities about the other person in the relationship, she has hope that if she loves him and is kind, that man will mature. But she has also a certain amount of vulnerability, if you will. But I've noticed there's something that goes unnoticed by men oftentimes, and that is in the areas of commitments. That when a man makes a verbal commitment, and then he fails to measure up to that, I find that there's something that wants to close up inside of a woman, and it'll close up to the point where she can become very hard, if you will. I believe that this area of vulnerability that a woman has in this area that she has to care and to feel, I believe that there's a sense where her greatest asset can become her greatest weakness or her greatest detriment, if you will. Here's what I mean by this. A salesman. What often makes a salesman effective in what he does? He's energetic. And he's excited about what he sells. But what we still learn on the sales floor is that one of the greatest detriments that a salesman has is time. Our brother Richard Dush, if you'll drive by Mattress Firm on any given day, most of the time when you drive down Highway 200 and you look into Mattress Firm, Richard's sitting by himself. And what we mean by that is that a salesman has a long time to think about one thing, and that is, there's nobody on this sales floor. And if there are three people today, I have to maximize that. And so what our sales managers used to tell us is that your greatest detriment is that you have lots of time to sit on the sales floor, wait for a customer to come in, and in that waiting period, you have a lot of time to think about how much money you're not making. And so even though you also have a propensity to be very excited about selling a car or whatever product you're selling, Richard's very excited about selling mattresses, you also have a great propensity to get discouraged, if you will. A woman has, I believe, she enters into a relationship with a lot of vulnerability. And she opens herself up. She has a lot of hope that even if things aren't perfect, they're going to be much more towards the realm of perfect at a later time. But I believe, especially in the area of commitments, when that man fails to meet his verbal commitments, and he's not being responsible in how he's dealing with things, I believe that ability to be vulnerable and to feel, I believe that just as that salesman, his excitement can turn into discouragement. That vulnerability for a woman, she'll often close herself up and close herself down to protect herself not feeling disappointment again. And I think that in this realm, we need to think about horsepower. We use the term all the time. But the strength of a horse, it's been harnessed for man's purposes for years. But did you know that a horse's greatest asset can also be its detriment? Did you know that a horse will actually run itself to death if the owner of the horse doesn't stop a horse from doing it? And there's a sense there with a woman, once again, her greatest blessing of making herself vulnerable and being in touch with what she feels around her and being able to add emotional spice, I believe it can become her greatest detriment too, because if there's hopes that are deferred, it can make the heart sick and she can close herself down to the point where she has a very difficult time opening herself up again. And so I want to talk for just a few moments about commitments. We are in a society that gets passed and through conversations. Our politicians do it all the time. They didn't used to do it. You know, just as our politicians used to control things through words, if you think about this, there used to be years ago three major news outlets. And a man could destroy his presidential run with one phrase. In fact, I'm gonna test that out right now. I'm gonna show you children this or you young adults this. Let me show this to you. And so if I say this phrase, I want you guys to, you that are 40 years old enough, I want you to finish the phrase. Read my lips. No new. Very good. Okay. Now, that happened in a day. That happened with President George Bush, the first George Bush. He said that in his presidential run. And of course, during his presidency, he had to raise taxes. That little phrase was played and replayed and played and replayed over and over and over again. Who's the president who couldn't spell potato? Shout it out. The vice president. Dan Quayle. Actually, I believe he spelled it correctly. But because the news media played that video over and over and over and over and over and over again, the most awkward pause in vice presidential debate history happened when Vice President-elect Dan Quayle was asked the question, you know, what would you do when you get that call if a nuclear bomb is coming? And the most awkward 7 seconds of your life, if you're a public speaker, happened during that time. Because he heard the question, he went, and you could just feel America imploding at that time. And that was played and replayed over and over again. Here's why I say this. Because now the control, I think, happens not through the lack of coverage. Now it's as if the control happens through an excess of coverage. Because the things that have happened in the last 5 years, politically speaking, whether Republican or Democrat, a man can trip up over himself. A man can he can renege on his promises. And guess what? It's almost because there's an excess of words. It's almost as if it goes unnoticed. And so I say all that to essentially say this. It's interesting to me that I find politicians, people behind the camera, just getting through a conversation. It doesn't matter if they're going to follow through. All that matters is in that interview is that they sound like they have a plan. They sound like they know what they're talking about. They sound like they have good intentions. And if they sound like they have good intentions, they get to that conversation. And then 3 months later, what they're doing contradicts that, and nobody calls them on the carpet because we have what? We have an excess of information. Here's why I say this. I find people, if you listen closely to people, most people are just getting through a conversation. Here's how they do it. A need comes up, and somebody says something like, oh, yeah, you need that? Oh, yeah, I'll take care of that for you. And then you know what you find? They never fulfill that obligation. There's something, young men, that I started years ago, and older men alike. And any time I make a verbal commitment, it's written down. If not, the stress of keeping up with those verbal commitments, it's too much, and you're not going to do it. But especially with your wife. Because we develop this mindset, okay, I've got to meet commitments on the outside world, but with the family, it's not that big of a deal. Not so, because I'm going to get back to this vulnerability aspect. Because when a man says, oh yeah, I'll take care of that, and you don't, that place of vulnerability that's wide open, it starts to close. And then a man says, yeah, I'll take care of that. I'll pick up that for the kids. And then he doesn't. It starts to close. Once again, a woman's greatest asset can be her greatest detriment in that she doesn't want to feel disappointment. So because she doesn't want to feel disappointment, she's going to keep closing that area where she's expecting something. And being a person, the advantage I have is listening to literally thousands of couples talk. And you can hear a man say, okay, I got what you're coaching. I'm going to put that into practice. And you can hear a woman sitting back and going, there is absolutely no movement emotionally upon her part because she's thinking, yeah, I've heard it all before. So we're in a society, guess what? We make commitments all the time. And one of the things I encourage you, use your iPhone reminder function. Use your date planner function. If you don't want to utilize those things, keep a pen and paper with you. But write down your commitments. Because when a woman hears a commitment, you don't come through. She hears a commitment, you don't come through. She hears a commitment, you don't come through. Something dies inside of her. And that's not fair. It's not good. Proverbs 31:26 tells us that the law of kindness is in her mouth. Women, I believe, have a greater ability to feel other people's pain around them. When my children are hungry, I'm like, they can wait an hour. My wife, it's like she can feel their pain. I think she's actually just hungry half the time, and she uses it. No, just joking. But my wife has to like eat like on the dot. But she can feel their pain. And she's like, we have to stop the car. We got to get some lunch. And I'm like, my dad used to drive for 10 hours. I was in the back of the truck. And by the way, it was that way. We'd go on a trip and we'd drive in the back of a truck without a bed liner for 10 hours straight. And we'd be like banging on like, we got to stop back here. And they would just keep looking straight. It was tough. There's no exaggeration there. And so I kind of want to tell my children about me growing up, and they're just looking at me, and she's like, well, they're not who you were growing up. You know, when my children fall, there's no blood, no foul on that. And I just tend to be like, they're going to be okay. My wife can feel it a little bit more. But once again, that ability to feel another person's pain, I think, shows us that they have an ability to care more, to want to care, to want to hope, to want to be proud of you. Here's what I often tell men. The fact that your wife is close to you is actually a compliment, because she's actually saying that she wants to trust you. She wants to be open. She wants to be respectful. But she doesn't know if you're going to come through on your commitments. And lastly, I want to share this with you. Something that took me a number of years to get, but as I've observed this, this is pretty amazing to see. Men tend to base how they feel about themselves on their work, but women tend to base how they feel about themselves more on their surroundings. Have you ever noticed that when you're remodeling your house, when everything's in disarray, how your wife tends to freeze up? I've seen some women, and with my wife also, that when the house is remodeled, if she knows there's an end goal in mind, that'll be okay. But if everything's in absolute disarray, it's amazing how it almost freezes a woman up. It's amazing how it almost shuts them down. It's like they can't function mentally with everything in disarray. Once again, this idea of projecting your gender on your wife. When we first moved into the house over here, we had a number of things that were out of place. And I remember the pressure that I could feel to get rid of certain elements of furniture. And what I'm thinking, because I could literally probably live in a barn, not as nice as this, but I could live in a barn, literally, and just have one little bed and one little table with a Bible on it, and no matter what things looked like around there, I could probably be pretty happy with that. I'd probably be like, it doesn't matter. But once again, we're not to project our gender on the other person. And what I tell men is, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to change her into your best male friend, but still in a woman's body. That's really what you're trying to do. And I said, you're not going to like the after effect upon that, because there's areas where she's feminine, where you want her to be feminine, but you're encouraging her to lose her femininity. But I say this because in the idea of loving the woman in your life, first of all, I just want to, just a huge compliment towards the moms in our body. Thank you so much for living Proverbs 31. It does not go unnoticed. And I think that with our daughters especially, your work and your example will continue for years and will be exemplified in their lives. I think that there's an effect upon the way you've lived with your sons, in that they don't even know, but subconsciously they're looking for a wife that has the same type of characteristics. And it goes a long way. But think differently than your gender. Meaning, once again, it's the small areas of rest that can make a huge difference. I can't tell you how many wives in counseling I've heard them say, as I was saying before, you know, just him putting gas in the car, how much I appreciate that. Him just picking up the children a little extra, how much of an oasis that gives her in her spirit. And that small, once again, that small work can go a long way. I feel like I've done my job as a husband when I can sense my wife feeling at ease. This idea of physical strain, not projecting your masculinity on her and just trying to treat her like your best friend, like your best male friend, and almost having a spirit of criticism that she can't lift that, or she can't take that lid off, or she can't operate that tool. And I have to confess that I sometimes have to watch my mouth in these areas, to be quite honest with you. But knowing that that's an opportunity for you to take some physical strain off her, and I think that affects her spirit. But this idea of tension, once again, I think most of us men, we thrive off it. Something breaks within a woman when that tension is unnecessarily consistently there. Commitments Oh, we're in a day where we need faithful men. God says that a faithful man shall abound with blessings. Your word meaning something. We're seeing a political scenario right now where it seems like the words of politicians mean absolutely nothing. If you listen to preaching of 50 years ago, it was a big deal when you preached on manhood that your word meant something. That if that man said it, he's going to come through with it. It's a big deal. But we tend to get weak with our wives. And I think something closes down within them. Carry a pen and paper with you. Make reminders on your phone. Don't make a commitment unless you can follow through with it. And if you can't follow through with it, revisit it back. Don't make excuses for it. And one of my scenarios is if someone makes a commitment that can't come through it, I'll ask them, I'll say, did you sleep? They'll say, well, yeah. I say, well, then you had time to do it. I'm a little rough on young guys. Actually, I'm not. I'm actually really super nice, to be honest with you. Too nice to them sometimes. And a woman's surroundings. I can't tell you the amount of counseling sessions I've done with a man who's made a commitment to, within his means, make repairs around the house, but he hasn't followed through. And something shuts down within the woman, and then the man tends to find an escape hatch by saying, well, she's just materialistic. It's people that matter. Well, once again, you're trying to project your gender on the woman. God has given them a gift to take care of a household. And that being the case, she also wants to know that it's as clean as it should be, or it's in working order within our means, if you will. My wife and I were very, 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 very lacking funds years ago in certain situations. But there's never an excuse not to be clean. There's never an excuse not to be organized. And within your means, there's repairs that can be done. And the whole focus of this message here is to, obviously, to look at the fact that love seeks not her own. And to remove the lens of masculinity and study your wife and dwell with her according to knowledge. And I find the men that don't take off their lens of masculinity are in danger of violating Colossians 3:19, which says, husbands love your wives and be not bitter against them. And so what men do is if they won't study their wives, the escape hatch that they take in their spirit is they just get bitter against them. Well, that's just the way she is. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of times you just haven't walked wisely as a man. Let's stand our feet if we can this morning and have a word of prayer. And could we have the musicians come forward if we don't mind? The musicians come forward. Sing it out.